I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Rain. Welcome to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
And part two of our exploration into how the heck are we going to electrify millions of homes really fast.
Speaking of bottoms and buildings, there's a LEED building at Oberlin College with a system that mimics a wetland to recycle and reuse its toilet water. But not enough students poop there to nourish the wetland, so the campus has recurring campaigns to fill its toilet seats. At one point, they were paying a quarter a poop. This year, contributors were encouraged to keep score, and the winner was honored as Your Royal Highness in the annual campus parade. For years, the talk about buildings and climate has focused on uber-sustainable new construction. But 80% of the buildings that will be here in 2050 are already here, and we're woefully behind in decarbonizing them. So we're taking a couple of episodes to explore work that's laying the foundation to radically speed things up. In part one, we saw New York City's Housing Authority wield its massive buying power to get manufacturers to make easy-to-install heat pumps for existing apartments.
This time, we're looking at another way to accelerate home electrification, using big data to focus programs and public investments in places where they'll have the greatest impact.
In Illinois, 40% of our landfill waste is construction and demolition debris. To pretend like we can just toss out all of our old building stock for new buildings is insane. It's kind of the elephant in the room. It's like, you know, we always talk about don't use a straw. Meanwhile, we're throwing entire buildings into landfills. It's crazy, not to mention all of the fossil fuels, everything that we use to actually build new buildings. That's a big reason why I do preservation work. We have to use these buildings and we have to learn how to make them more efficient. We do not need to tear them all down.
That's Carla Bruni, a historic preservation specialist based in Chicago.
Historic preservation, everybody thinks of like the beautiful Queen Anne's and the high style stuff. It really didn't speak to me very much, even as a student. I initially was like, yeah. And then I was like, I'm kind of more interested in the everyday local people actually living in these buildings and what makes a city look like a city and how do we help people fix up these homes.
Carla is the housing preservation specialist for the Chicago Bungalow Association.
Chicago bungalows are based on a form of housing in India. 1.5-story brick and limestone homes with overhanging eaves to block out sunlight in the summertime and then let it in the wintertime when all the leaves drop on the trees.
Bungalows were built in the 1910s and 20s along the western edge of the city. These were affordable homes for immigrants moving out of the tenements and into the middle class. You could buy one for a few $100 down and payments of $20 a month.
If you wanted to focus on retrofitting a certain type of housing in Chicago, bungalows would make a pretty good target.
There's about 80,000 of them around still. They're a third of our single-family housing stock.
While the Bungalow Association was originally bungalow-specific, today its scope includes all vintage housing in the city. And while it serves all of its 25,000 members with advice on maintaining these old buildings, much of the association's work is focused on lowering energy bills for homeowners with limited means.
Gas bills are crazy here.
That's how most Chicagoans heat their homes.
Just in the last 6 months or so, our gas bills have skyrocketed.
One of every five Chicago households is behind in paying their gas bills.
And now the gas company proposed a 60% rate hike, the largest in U.S. history.
These increases hit low-income folks the hardest. In one survey of Chicago's low-income homeowners, half chose to endure uncomfortable degrees of heat and cold and or cut back on spending for essentials like food and medicine just so they could pay their energy bills. The city of Chicago aims for 80,000 homes to get energy retrofits in the next 7 years, but the Bungalow Association and Elevate, another Chicago-based nonprofit, say these shouldn't be just any old homes. Elevate's mission is ensuring everyone has access to clean and affordable heat, power, and water. Rachel Shai is their director of research and innovation.
This is equity-driven work. It's not enough to do high-savings buildings. We really need to focus on communities that need these investments the most.
But the last thing you'd want to do is decarbonize a low-income family's home and have their energy bills go up. Since heating is the largest source of energy use in buildings, the best way to avoid that is to do the unsexy stuff first.
Growing up, you know, it's like if we had a window open and the heat was on, be like, what are you trying to heat the whole neighborhood?
Yeah, that was my mom too. But it's not just a question of closing the windows.
Older homes are leaky. They didn't have the kind of technology when they were putting them together to get every little seam perfect, and things have shifted over time. Tightening these things up really matters. With bungalows, we've really gotten it down to a literal science, having done so many of them over the years. We know exactly how to get the results we want. The best thing always to do, and we should always start with, is air sealing. Plugging up all the little holes and cracks, essentially, that lead to all of that air leaving or entering your home. So it's caulk and sealants, stuff like that. We can tighten up the envelopes of these homes tremendously. There's usually somewhere around a 40 or 50% reduction in airflow going in and out of the house. Most importantly, where you get the biggest return, though, is attics. Once you air seal and insulate, you can get mechanicals like heat pump smaller, meaning it doesn't use as much energy because you're not losing all that air.
But frequently, low-income homes don't even get this far because they have a backlog of repairs.
You know, no one talks about repair funds when you go on some green building podcast that's just talking about how perfect heat pumps are. Well, that's great, but if you have a giant hole in your roof, it doesn't mean anything.
The Inflation Reduction Act won't pay to fix your roof, but it does contain funding for low-income homeowners to leak seal, insulate, and electrify. The problem is that remaining upfront costs and the just plain complexity of navigating these projects are still huge barriers. Sitting around and waiting for people to claim rebates one by one isn't going to cut it.
The city needs a systematic, justice-centered approach. To figure out just what that should be, Elevate entered into a research partnership with the City of Chicago, Commonwealth Edison, or ComEd, the local electric utility, the U.S. Department of Energy, and the National Renewable Energy Laboratory.
The team started its search for the best place to focus by looking for the homes which burn the most gas.
We layered energy use data on top of property assessor data in order to match homes to their energy use.
They found that Chicago homes in general burn 40% more gas than the Midwest average. But the biggest gas guzzlers are single-family homes built before World War II of either wood frame or brick construction.
We've got wood and brick, sticks and stones. I feel like we should say something about straw. You know, I'm gonna huff and puff and blow in some cold winter air.
Puff away, Mr. Wolf. Straw-built homes have great R values. But back to the ones made of sticks and bricks. The highest household gas use was in neighborhoods least able to afford it. Like Auburn Gresham, a predominantly black working class community in Chicago's South Side, where bungalows are the most common housing type. The researchers identified 20 neighborhoods with overlapping energy poverty and high prevalence of energy hogging homes as places to target retrofits.
How deep a retrofit are we talking about here?
Good question. Elevate and the Bungalow Association need to know not just which houses to work on, but how far to go. How much to insulate, which things to electrify before you reach the point of diminishing returns or end up elevating people's energy bills. In keeping with the fairy tale theme, it's the Goldilocks dilemma. Which size retrofit is just right?
Elevate had this hypothesis that existing homes in the city of Chicago could easily achieve 50% energy savings without fancy technologies. They didn't need to do, you know, major overcladding work or have to have solar in order to achieve those savings. So we asked NREL if they could help us test that hypothesis.
NREL is where researchers like Lixi Liu have been working since 2014 on a tool called ResStock, short for Residential Building Stock, that uses big data to model the impacts of energy retrofits.
I did 3 years of robotics in high school, so it was natural for me to get into mechanical engineering with a focus on machine design because it was related to robotics.
Al Gore's film An Inconvenient Truth altered her trajectory.
I changed my major from machine design to focus on renewable energy.
Now she works in NREL's Residential Buildings Energy Group.
ResStock is a model of the U.S. housing stock. We typically model one home for every 240 in the U.S., which means we have a little over 500,000 housing units to represent 133 million homes in the U.S. We scrape publicly available data sources in order to describe the distribution of wall types, vintage of the housing, prevalence of gas being used for heating versus electricity versus other fuel. You can basically model a technology change or retrofit.
Rachel saw ResStock as a powerful tool for testing Elevate's hypothesis.
If we could calibrate their building model's assumption to what was really on the ground, then we could really see if these 50% energy savings were feasible. I loved working with NREL. The team of engineers were very good listeners. They did not say, we have all the answers. They want to provide their technical assistance. And often providing that directly to cities is really hard. So we played that intermediary role. And we went back and forth for probably the first 6 to 8 months just to understand the NREL model input to make sure they were accurate so that we could get a good baseline to then move on to the savings packages.
The team threw 58 efficiency and electrification measures into NREL's virtual hopper.
Once we understand how effective they are at reducing energy and also how applicable that technology is for the housing stock, we then sort of mix and match.
The research team threw some measures out the window, like windows themselves, which save surprisingly little energy relative to what they cost.
Other discarded measures included Energy Star washing machines, refrigerators, dishwashers, and pool pumps. They mixed and matched the measures that were left and then threw some of those combinations out the window. In the end, they winnowed those 58 measures down to 3 packages.
Ooh, I love packages.
But Brian, you'll have to guess what's inside because you're a contestant on
Let's Make a Retrofit Deal.
I'll go for door number 1.
Before we reveal what you've chosen, let's look behind door number 2 to see what you missed out on.
Cozy up your home with a new natural gas furnace, an air sealing and wall and attic insulation to hold in all that heat. This building envelope efficiency package saves $800 to $1,100 a year on your energy bills.
But you chose door number 1 instead.
How sure are you about that choice? Maybe you're having a little bit of FOMO about what's behind door number 3.
How lucky do you feel? Do you want to stick or switch? No pressure.
Just the fate of human civilization and about 1 million species on the verge of extinction. I'll stick with door number 1.
You just won a week-long trip to Madrid. This high-efficiency cold weather heat pump plus air sealing and insulation will keep you warm at home and drop your annual energy bills $1,500, enough to cover hotels and round-trip airfare.
Let's see what you passed up with door number 3.
If you had chosen door number 3, you'd be kissing your gas goodbye with this complete electrification package. That's weatherization, a cold weather heat pump, plus a heat pump water heater, a heat pump clothes dryer, and a fabulous induction stove.
Oh, man.
Don't feel too bad about missing out on all those other appliances, because together, they only save 2% more energy and less than $100 a year. The NREL model's conclusion is that cutting costs and carbon in Chicago is all about weatherization and heat pumps.
Those two alone to achieve the 50% target.
And that was just the floor in Elevate's hypothesis. NREL's model predicts a single-family home in Chicago could cut energy use as much as 75% and greenhouse gas emissions by 8 metric tons, just by making those two basic changes. For comparison, the average gas-powered passenger vehicle emits 4.6 tons.
We don't have to wait for new fancy technologies. We can do that now.
Problem solved, right?
Well, there's a couple of caveats. One is that the results depend a lot on where you live, the climate, and the relative cost of electricity and gas. Chicago's utility rates are stacked in favor of heat pumps due to a very high fixed gas charge. If you heat with gas, you pay a $400 a year service fee, independent of how much gas you actually use. If you switch to a heat pump, that service charge goes down by half, and if you give up gas entirely, it goes away. Greenhouse gas reductions from heat pumps also depend on the cleanliness of the power used to run them. A heat pump in Chicago, where ComEd is 20% coal and only 4% wind and solar, doesn't do nearly as much as it would in Washington State, which has 40% clean energy, or anywhere with solar panels on the roof. The other caveat is one we all know. You can't believe everything you see on your computer. There's the model, and then there's the reality.
When developing a plan to electrify households which already have trouble paying utility bills, Elevate wants to be really sure they don't make things worse.
That brings us to the phase of the research going on now, trying it out in the real world.
That's where the Bungalow Association comes in. As Carla discovered, high-efficiency electric replacements for gas appliances aren't cheap.
There's some sticker shock. I was a little taken aback by some of the costs of things.
Federal dollars are coming to defray those costs for low-income households, but they're not available yet. So the fastest and cheapest way to get this ground-truthing phase off the ground was to piggyback on the weatherization work the Bungalow Association has already done.
We have done probably tens of thousands, literally, of homes at this point. We can already point to all of these homeowners who've already had that work done. And beyond them having that work done, so that they can move on to this next phase of electrification, we're using the same contractors. So they trust them. They treat our members with great respect. They get the work done quickly. They get it done efficiently. They clean up after themselves, which is not often the case in a lot of neighborhoods we work in. So start calling people up. The pitch was, hey, you already did this other program with us. Were you happy with it? You know, and 99% of the time they were like, absolutely. And then we were like, you want to go to the next step? And just explained they were going to get an air source heat pump, a hot water heater, an electric induction stove, an electric clothes dryer, an upgrade on their electrical system. They're going to have their gas completely cut off. All of it's going to be free. You don't have to pay a dime. Same people you already know are going to be coming into your house. We're going to hold your hand. If you're interested, let us know. And yeah, most people were quite happy to take us up on it. Elevate's a lot geekier, and I say that with great love and admiration, in terms of running all the numbers and doing the modeling. So we love working with them because it's like we have all the members and we have these incredible relationships with all of these members and contractors. So it's kind of a perfect marriage.
Elevate's engineers did their geeky magic, isolating the heating and cooling loads from the volunteers' energy bills, and running that through the NREL model to make sure their bills wouldn't go up.
I was actually surprised. A lot of people had cut their bills in half.
Of the first 30 candidates, only two were rejected due to a projected rise in energy bills. The rest were referred back to the family business that did their weatherization.
They are the point of contact initially, so it's the same people that they already know, have already been in their house. Joellen is still calling them to make the appointment from the office. Nick and Eddie, who come in and do the electrification portion of it, they are literally related.
They're nephews. Nick Skelnick's dad also worked in the family business.
Since I was a little guy, I was always brought out to job sites.
After high school, he followed in his father's footsteps.
Once I started construction, it was a lot of back-breaking labor. And I said, well, the heating and cooling guys seem to have it a little easier. So I went back to school and I got certified for HVAC.
Nick says he only really started to care about climate change after having his three daughters.
You just think about it differently because when you're not here, they still have to be here. And you want to make sure that you're leaving the world in a position where you know that they're going to survive and that they could thrive. I think that's the number one we bring to our customers is to really sit down and take the time to think about the long-term impacts on the climate and their pocketbook. To be able to introduce this new technology to them and be the one that they trust to install it in their homes is very rewarding.
Nick says that with those rewards comes great responsibility.
The people we're serving, they have one home. You have to get it right the first time for them because they don't have another $20,000 they could throw into a system to pick up where you messed up. If we don't install the right products now and your first 10,000 electrification homes aren't the best 10,000 jobs you're going to do, you're going to make an uphill battle because one bad job leads to 10,000 bad reviews because that person tells the next person and they don't stop. It's like wildfire. So I feel a lot of responsibility on our shoulders here to make sure electrification can take off.
Ensuring that people are satisfied with the retrofit and actually get those energy savings takes more than just installing the mechanicals correctly.
Education for the people, helping them learn about the systems, what they should expect after the system is installed. It all plays such an important role. You know, you have some people who've had a boiler, which operates very different than a mini split. You know, you have one system that moves no air and another system that is constantly moving air. So you have to remember they're not used to that air movement. So you have to be able to teach them and give them the best understanding of what's to come. The stoves, which are the afterthought of the entire program, was the hardest sell. 90% of the questions.
For an appliance that represents just 2% of a home's energy use.
there was a lot of nervousness to changing out the stoves.
There have been some important real-world lessons aside from dealing with stove anxiety. One is that old homes need electrical upgrades to accommodate new equipment.
Any electric currently in the home that doesn't meet building code becomes a huge issue when you have to pull a permit. We've had some houses that we did have to rewire the entire house, and we had some that have a little bit of cloth wire, but they've already started to rewire the house. Breaker boxes just not big enough to handle the loads once we turn it all electric, so we'll have to upgrade.
Supply chain delays slowed the project down by nearly a year, and some companies dealt with low inventory by rationing the number of units they deliver to a single address.
We chose to handle the delivery in our warehouse because the people have to work. You're getting a stove from one place. You're getting a dryer from another place. They give you a 4-hour window of delivery. So if we gave it to the homeowners directly delivered to their house and they've already missed 5 to 6 days of work, then we have to come back and install it. That's 12 days in a year that they would have had to have missed work. You never want to be responsible for someone losing their job or not making ends meet.
When companies wouldn't deliver enough appliances to their warehouse, Nick and Eddie's workaround was, not surprisingly, a family affair.
The stoves and dryers were delivered all over the place. To my mother-in-law's house, then my mom's house.
They were the last appliances to arrive, and the wait meant a month of partial electrification in which residents had higher electricity bills and that hefty fee for the gas hookup.
It was one of those lessons learned. Get as many as humanly possible up front so we don't have this happen again where there's any kind of a lag because we can't cap the gas until we do this.
Once everything is installed, the contractors spend several hours with each owner teaching them how to use and maintain their new equipment.
We've put together a wonderful leave behind with the Bungalow Association because to cram everything in that we do in 2 hours, 3 hours, just a lot for them to have to process. One time the lady called and I said, oh, something wrong already. She said, no, I had so much on my mind. I let you guys walk out of here without saying thank you. I said, oh, we thank you for giving us an opportunity to work in your house. If you have any problems, give us a call. And we haven't heard from her, but fortunately, that's a good sign.
Not everyone feels the way Nick does. The aging of the HVAC workforce, where the average age is 55, is one of the barriers to electrification.
People are going to call the same guy, the same company to come out and service your furnace for the next 30 years if he does a good job. People are protective, like, no, I only call this person. As that guy, you know, he's in the business for 30 years. He's not trying to learn the new technology. He's comfortable with what he's done for 30 years. And he's going to do it for the next 10 years until he's ready to retire. So rather than accepting new technology, they rather just talk bad about it. There's a lot of misinformation.
Has completed 40 single-family retrofits so far and has a goal of reaching 100 by the end of 2023. The team still has a lot of learning to do.
We're really trying to learn as a group, the cities, the utilities, the energy efficiency implementers. We all want to learn how do we do it so that homeowners are protected and that we really are seeing the savings that we would like to realize.
Elevate's engineers are monitoring heat pump performance and energy usage. They're currently analyzing winter data from the first set of homes, but there should be benefits in summertime as well.
Chicago set the record in 1995 for the most deadly heat wave in U.S. history, with over 700 deaths in 5 days. The city still has much lower rates of air conditioning than the national average, especially among people of color, who are hit the hardest by extreme heat.
Heat pumps double as air conditioners and expand access to in-home cooling. The building envelope improvements are also expected to help both during heat waves when all those air conditioners overload the grid and during power outages from polar vortices. NREL simulated a cold snap and a heat wave to test homes' thermal resilience when the power goes out.
The buildings were able to retain comfortable temperatures for much longer periods of time.
There's more to the research than running numbers.
It's important to see what's really going on. where are the hiccups with supply chain and financing? Where's the pushback from the homeowners? You have to make sure people are actually comfortable. We're sussing it out and working with homeowners that we know who are going to be very honest with us about what's working and what's not. It's a dialogue. I'm really honored to be a part of something sort of like an intimate process, talking to the people. How does it feel to be in your house? What are you worried about? So far, so good. We're really early, but I even talked to somebody yesterday and I asked her about the stove, you know, and she's like, I gotta tell you, I'm really surprised, but I love this electric stove. And I was like, thank you. Like, I'm so glad to hear that.
So is Lixie at NREL.
The fuel validation piece really have made a full circle. And now we have the data and the user experience to be able to back up those research findings that we have.
I think of it as more like a spiral than a circle.
Even though I'm a researcher and, you know, it always says more research is necessary, I'm really excited that we're doing implementation in parallel. The research is being applied, learning as we go. And what I'm most excited about is that ComEd, the utility, was an advisory partner, as well as the City of Chicago, learning along with us. The City of Chicago incorporated our data and research on the housing stock and the priority neighborhoods into their Chicago Climate Action Plan. Last year's budget included $15 million to jumpstart an efficiency program for these communities. The city's investment is an important first step, and I think they're seeing it as a down payment.
ComEd has also committed $40 million for low-income retrofits in Northern Illinois, and all states are currently in the process of deciding how they'll spend federal funds for that purpose, coming through the Inflation Reduction Act.
NREL is using what it's learned from the Chicago Project to help by creating fact sheets for cities and states across the U.S., showing which buildings and retrofit measures will get the most bang for the buck.
It's been heartening to see just how much you can actually do with retrofits. It makes me more hopeful that we're moving forward. And I do think it's going to move pretty quickly now that we've really started doing the work. I think it's going to expand, and that gives me a lot of hope.
Nick hopes his daughters will be part of that as the next generation to carry on the work.
I know most guys probably don't hope their daughters are installing furnaces or whatnot, but I really do.
Thanks for joining us for Cool Solutions. And thanks to Carla Bruni, Rachel Shy, Lixie Liu, and Nick Skelnick for sharing their story.
Thanks to Jacob Godinez for hosting our game show, and to Atun, BioUnit, Martin Schellekens, Friar Society Orchestra, Fundacion Robo, Michael Chapman, and Scott Holmes for our music.